Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. We are broadcasting live on the road today. We are headed up to the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and we are actually broadcasting live from inside the SUV. We are not moving right now. Of course, we could if my wife felt comfortable driving where she's not familiar, but we pulled over to get a bite for lunch, and they are inside, and I'm out in the car because the show must go on. So we're getting ready to head up to Raleigh. We're a little over halfway there, probably 80% there. Stopped for the night in Florence, South Carolina. Had supper last night with some friends. So, but the show must go on, even though we're on the road. So we will be have a great guest today. Of course, it is Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Backcombe Magazine, his regular day today, and he's going to be talking to us all about garlic. Wonderful garlic, growing garlic, the benefits of garlic, and how to make some wonderful garlic powder, the perfect recipe for that, apparently. So we'll be bringing him on a little bit later. But you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, and we'll be back right after this short break. We are on the road to the ALBC Annual Conference in Cary, North Carolina. We'll be back after this short break.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Treats for chickens. Health and happiness for your modern backyard pet chicken. Healthy pet chicken basics, non-toxic bug relief, treats, organic snacks, and more. All created with your backyard pet chickens in mind. At Treats for Chickens, we treat your chickens well. Find us online at treatsforchickens.com or ask for us in your local farm and feed store or favorite pet shop. That's treatsforchickens.com. No matter how much we pamper our chickens, no matter how often we clean our coops, there is always that chance they will get mites and lice. If they do, you want to treat them as naturally as possible. Poultry Protector from Carefree Enzymes uses all-natural enzymes to eliminate the mites and lice from your coop, nesting boxes, and chickens with no egg withdrawal period. My chickens don't always have mites and lice, but when they do, I prefer Poultry Protector from CarefreeEnzymes.com. Happy flocking, my friends.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Today's show is just going to be 1 hour, so the commercial breaks will be a little bit longer than they normally are, you know, that are they are few and far between. But we do have to pay the bills, and we'll try to make them a little bit longer today since the show is only an hour, so we lose about two commercial breaks. But if you're just tuning in, we are on the road. I'm broadcasting live on location from the SUV. we left Homestead yesterday. Probably around 11:30, and we made our way up here to just kind of break the trip up a little bit, traveling with a 17-month-old. He does great, by the way, but he you know, just for us too. Mama is what, 20 weeks pregnant, so just to break up the trip. So we stayed in Florence, South Carolina last night. We stayed here before when we were on the Chicken Whisperer tour back over the summer when we hit lots of places, actually, and stayed at the same hotel the whole nine yards. So we'll be, Jen had actually teaching this morning. You know, I know she's a school teacher, teaches online, and so she had two classes she had to teach this morning. So me and Caleb went for a little walk while she did her teaching. Now it's Daddy's turn to go to work. So they're in the restaurant having some lunch, and as soon as the show's over at 1, we'll be hitting the road, make the 2.5-3 hour trip up to Cary, North Carolina, which really is right there in Raleigh, Cary, Durham, Wake Forest, all that right in the same area, I believe. So, but officially it's in Cary, just outside of Raleigh, for the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy Annual Conference. Really looking forward to it. In fact, it's all-day Friday and all-day Saturday. Saturday is really the main meat and potatoes day. There'll be a lot of workshops, pre-workshops on Friday, and I go first. I'll be kicking off the whole kit and caboodle 8 a.m. Tomorrow morning. From 8 to 11:30, I'll be teaching a workshop on getting started with backyard poultry, just a very basic, a little bit about everything class. And I must say that I'm just about done with my PowerPoint. Here, let me rephrase that to be honest. Jen's just about done with my PowerPoint. So, but no, we're working on that truly together, and it's great. She has a lot more PowerPoint experience than I do. But I think normally I don't PowerPoint, but I thought since this is what it is, the ALBC Annual Conference, I thought I might want to jazz it up a little bit, so nothing real fancy. And it'd just be a great basic class for folks. I've heard quite a few people have signed up for it, so I'm looking forward to that. I've got a gallon bag of pecans already shelled out of the yard for Pat. I'm going to see Pat Foreman there. Let me just get over here to the studio and see if she's called in. She has not today. She's probably on the road as well. So it looks like it's just me. But about 12:15, a quarter past the hour, we're going to bring on Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. And he's going to be talking about garlic, all about garlic, I guess the benefits of garlic and how to make some great homemade garlic powder. Definitely looking forward to that. I need to get my garlic in the ground. I promised Arlena that I would plant garlic this year, even though I can't harvest it for like 9 months. I'm like, are you kidding me? I can plant so much stuff that's ready in 55 days, let alone 9 months. But I promised her I'd put some garlic in the ground, so I'm going to try to be good to my word and get some of that in the ground here in the garden down at the old homestead and work on that. So, but definitely enjoy being on the road. In fact, the contract with Tractor Supply includes a one Chicken Whisperer power. hour to the poultry tour every quarter. So it'll be fun to sit down and kind of plan out where we're going to go. That doesn't include all of our other tours that we do. I've already got two booked in April coming up, one to the Alabama Chicken and Egg Festival, which is the 13th and 14th of April 2013 in Moulton, Alabama. And the weekend right after that, I'll be down in Mobile, kind of opposite parts of the state there in Alabama. In Mobile, down near Fort something, right there on Mobile Bay. And so by then, we'll have a camper. We're going to have a camper before Christmas. Many of you know about the Chicken Whisper Mobile that we're anxious to take possession of here, and our goal there is right before Christmas to take possession of that. Wait a minute. Did I just say that we were going to be taking possession of a nice tour vehicle, like a travel trailer, before? What did I say? Did we hear it? Christmas? So, yeah, we're getting that so we can really go around the country and spread the chicken love like we do every year, but maybe even a little bit more now and more comfortable now as we tour the country and spread the chicken love. So, hey, I've got some good news for you guys as we wait for Richard to call in. I'll try to bring him on promptly, so because, again, we have to end the show today at 1. But let me get right over here. I posted this on our Facebook page. You, too, can be a fan on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer. But I posted it early this morning when the news was in my email. And do you remember that young boy, JJ, down near Daytona Beach, Florida, who has autism, and, you know, the city said he had to get rid of his birds, and then something got in there and killed his birds, whether it was a person, an intruder, or a predator. I still haven't, I think most people now are saying that it was a person that beheaded a lot of them. He still has some. But the news is, the good news is, out today, that the young boy, JJ, down near Daytona Beach, Florida, who has autism, is going to be able to keep his chickens. Hallelujah for that. That is great news. The city council unanimously approved a new law allowing backyard chickens on Wednesday, which basically leaving their attorney for nothing to do. They hired an attorney. He showed up at the meeting ready to fight the case legally, but he didn't have to do that. So he's claiming it is a big win. And the city council unanimously approved a new law allowing backyard chickens. So JJ is going to get to keep his chickens. I think he calls them ducks, which is fun if you've been following the story. And so that is great news. He gets to keep his chickens. And we're actually going to have them on the show. We're going to be working on there's another family, too, in Wilmington that's having a hard time keeping their chickens. Also has a young child with autism. They're using them as therapy animals. So I've contacted both families. They're going to be coming on the radio show. I don't know exactly what date. This family here down in Daytona wanted me to wait until after the 7th because that's when the court date was, and she wasn't allowed to talk about the case publicly once she hired an attorney. But I do plan on having an upcoming show with both of these families to tell us about their fight to keep these therapeutic chickens for their children who have autism, maybe even have a specialist on to talk about that and what they've experienced before and after chickens with their children with autism. So we are going to have a radio show on this. I'm just trying to get a day. I've have contacted both families, and we're looking at a date where I can have them on and talk about this whole topic. So that's good news I've got for you today. The young boy, JJ, down near Daytona Beach, that case, he does get to keep his chickens. Now, in there it says apparently they can keep 3. Now, there were some comments on the Facebook about just 3 chickens. They would have rather it had 10 chickens or 12 chickens or 8 chickens or 6 chickens, but just 3. And then they, you know, are talking about, and I agree. 100% I agree. You know, let's make it 6, 8, 10, or 12. But here's the key. And I've been down this road many a times before, and this is what they can do. And it makes sense. And I posted it on our Facebook page in the comments. I said, look, take what you can get now. Take it. Take what you can get. If it's three, great. It's three more than you could have before. Take the three now. Because what you can do is go back a year from now, maybe 2 years from now, and you can use the city's own information against them. Y'all have heard me say this before. A year from now, 2 years from now, you can go back, you can lobby and try to say, hey, we want to keep 12 chickens now. We want to keep 10. We want to keep 8. And they're like, oh, no, we just went down this road. You can keep 3. Yeah, but you said 3 because you were worried about all these problems. You can go ahead and get an open records request from the city. Apply for an open records request to get all the complaints over the last period of, say, a year or 2 years or whatever it's been, and see how many complaints there were against chickens, how many complaints there were against dogs, how many against cats, and use their own information against them. You can say, well, look, there was 4,500 complaints last year alone for dogs. There was 2,600 for cats, and there were only 6 complaints about chickens all year long. So using your own information, obviously it shows you that all your worries about smell and noise and rodents and predators and all this upward cost for animal control and enforcement didn't occur. Your own information, your own studies, your own paperwork shows you that this was not an issue. 6 complaints all year long. So tell me again why you don't want to let us have 6. Because when, you know, 2 years from now, we'll come back and show the same thing. Hey, there's been 6 chickens. Yeah, there's been 4 complaints. So can we have maybe 10 or 12 or whatever the case may be? So by taking what you can get 3 now, you can go back and then use the own city's information against them when you go and ask for more. But take what you can get. Consider it a blessing. Again, you can stand up there and jump up and down all you want about, hey, this is my property rights and the Constitution and this, that, and the other. But, you know, I don't know of a single case, maybe one, where that's even worked ever. So at least they got 3 now. So, and I'm all about property rights, all about the Constitution, all about American, being my property, feeding my family. You all know me, I'm about that. But and I've never seen the case work before ever in the history of man. We're just standing there throwing the Constitution in their faces. Worked? Should it? Yes. Does it? No. Okay, so the issue there is, hey, you know, good for them. They've got three chickens they're going to be able to keep now. They can go back and use the own city's information against them to try to keep more. So congratulations, JJ. You can keep your chickens down there in Daytona Beach. Maybe when I'm down there in Florida, I will have to stop by and say hello, maybe broadcast from your backyard. How cool would that be? Really looking forward to that. We'd love to stop and visit folks. So anyway, that was the good news there regarding the some chickens in the news for you. So it's a quarter past the hour, so we're going to get right to the phone line. Shorter show today. 1 o'clock we have to end, and we're talking all about garlic with our good friend Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Richard, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, I am. How you doing, Andy?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us. We're on the road. We're heading up to the ALBC Annual Conference here, which is going to be Friday and Saturday. And we made the trip down from the homestead where we stopped in Florence, South Carolina. And Jen's in the restaurant having lunch. I'm broadcasting from the SUV. And as soon as we're done here at 1, I'll be hitting the road and heading up to Raleigh for the conference on Friday and Saturday. Looking forward to that. So we're on the road. I know you've got some things you've got to do, so we agreed at 1 o'clock end time. So we wanted to go ahead and bring you on and talk all about this great thing called garlic that I've noticed you either love it or hate it. I know growing up my parents had a friend that couldn't stand garlic. Yeah, I mean, no matter what he ordered, he could taste it if it was in there. There's garlic in this. He had that unique taste. He's just not a fan. You either love it or you hate it. I don't think there's an in-between. But I think most people love the garlic bread, the garlic in the Italian food, the garlic for this, garlic for that, garlic clove. And apparently growing garlic is pretty easy. I haven't done it. I promised Arlena, who comes on Wednesdays, that I would plant some this year. The problem with it that she told me was, or that I said, was that I plant it now and I can't really benefit from it for like 9 months or something. It's crazy. You know, most crops, you know, 55 days, 65 days to maturity, or 60 days until you're picking this stuff and eating it. And with garlic, I plant it now and I don't believe I can benefit from it until like summer. So I'm like, I got to keep this area in my garden just for garlic for all these months just to enjoy a little bit of it. So, but I promised her I would. So that's one of my goals here around Thanksgiving, to get the garlic in the ground. But we're ready and willing to learn all about what you know about garlic.
Yeah. And this is even a little more specific because I was going to also talk about about garlic powder because it's a real
yeah.
it's a real nice gift. It's a gift to give, you know, Christmas gift, holiday gifts, Thanksgiving, you know, friends, neighbors, whatever. And as part of that discussion on garlic powder, we get back to the important information about selecting the kind of garlic you grow and how you grow it. And that's sort of a little more specific area that I wanted to talk about. You know, most people are familiar with the soft garlic, the soft neck varieties of garlic, that, you know, the common kind you get for the clothes in the grocery store for, you know, three for a dollar or whatever it is, and the smaller clothes, and the other things like garlic they call elephant garlic, which really isn't garlic at all. It's actually a leek. But I, what I want to talk about is stiff neck garlic, and that's really that's a bit of a different variety because it has some other attributes that just make it really, really good as powder. And I mean, the way I, to my way of thinking, it's also a better plant and a better, you know, a better form of garlic to eat because it has, you know, just has some really good qualities to it. Now, the stiff neck garlic is a really cold weather variety. They, if you look at the varieties, if you actually go and Google stiff neck, or if you go to a place where they sell you know, a co-op or a health food area, or whatever, where they sell garlic, you'll find that these are mainly Russian, German, and northern European type varieties, where the weather, where the cold season is longer, and it's a cold generally you know, a cold weather climate anyway. So you'll find the names of them. You know, sometimes you just say Russian or German stiff neck or whatever. Then sometimes they also have names that are, you know, very obviously that kind of name. So they come from cold climate areas, and the problem is that it's actually a benefit. The reason we don't see more stiff neck is because it doesn't keep as long. It growing soft neck garlic favors the commercial product because it can be shipped, stored longer, harvested more effectively because it's grown. A lot of it's grown on the West Coast, and then they can ship it around, and their growing season's longer and all that. And it's not to say that you can't make garlic powder out of soft neck garlic varieties, but what mm-hmm. what I want to really talk about is the stiff neck. You know, it's a stronger flavor. It's a better keep. It's not a better keeper, but it's a more firm product. I think, you know, a little harder, and it just tastes, you know, I think it just tastes better all around. Just a much fuller flavor as a powder. You know, an amendment to your pizzas or your breads or your you know, you can put it in anything and mix it with butter, whatever you do with it. It's just a more hearty and substantial, fuller flavor than just the average stiff neck, soft neck garlic. So, you know, it's also the kind of thing. And like, there are places in the country where you can grow garlic in the traditional spring season. You know, plant it in the spring and grow it. But more than likely, or more traditionally, garlic is grown, as you mentioned, it's planted in the fall. It's a fall planter, and it really, you know, really works, you know, works better. For our Canadian listeners, if there are any, or northern tier U.S. listeners, you know, obviously that works. The best conditions and the best situation is to plant it in the fall. But you can plant in the fall anywhere, really, except that you need to try to harden the bulbs off before you set them. And a lot of people in other words, they have to experience a cold mm-hmm. situation to almost sort of replicate the growing situation they would have in a colder climate. So if you live in the South, you might want to actually put them in the refrigerator and cool them down a little bit before you plant them, or plant them earlier in the season instead of planting them when you traditionally would start your normal spring planting. You would go earlier a few weeks and plant them when the ground is still, you know, still fairly cold and the air is cold, because they need to sit in the ground for a while in a cold, in a cooler environment in order to process themselves correctly, in order to form their bulbs and all the necessary things that makes it, you know, good, a good plant. And as you said, I mean, well, I think you said it, garlic is pretty easy to grow. I mean, we used to sell a book about growing garlic, and somebody came up and said, why? I mean, you know, you can just stick it in the ground and it grows. And, you know, I realized after having grown it that he was absolutely right. I mean, you really, although the book was amazingly thorough, and I really sort of, you know, couldn't imagine what you could say about it, but when I was looking at the book, there's a lot to say about it. But you really, if you do not have a green thumb, garlic is a great, you know, it's a great first choice for a beginner gardener, because you really, it's very, very difficult to fail. So if you plant in the fall, you're going to have better luck in most climates. If you plant in the spring, the problem with the spring planting is it does take forever, as you mentioned. I mean, even the fall planting can take, it's a long season, a long cycle.
Right.
But the but the spring planting takes a long, long, long time. And generally speaking, the plant does not form as heartily, and it just doesn't get as big if they're planted in the spring as opposed to being planted in the fall. So and there's also something sort of encouraging about planting something in the fall and sort of forgetting about it. I mean, you get through the snow and snow cover and the, you know, everything's dying down and you sort of forget, and up pops out of the ground. You see pop the little leafy green tops, and that's your garlic coming up, and it's one of the early sprouters. So it's sort of encouraging to see that come up. And of course that was something that's been planted a whole, you know, months before. So
yeah.
And you know, it really works. So it's a good point. But maybe I can get into we have a seed outlet, or what's called an outlet, it's a seed store here. It does a lot of organic seeds, a lot of heirloom seeds, almost all heirloom seeds. And I'm sure there's others like this all around the country. I'm sure, you know, any urban area has things like this, and I'm sure quite a few rural areas, and there's always people who save seeds, there are always people who sell bulbs and whatever, but you know, you almost have to make sure you ask for the stiff-neck varieties, and for the most part, you're going to find people who do, you know, set them aside or do carry, make it a point to carry some the stiff-neck varieties, mainly for the reasons I just described.
Right.
So you want to find the stiff-neck first, and then the other thing is it's really important to let it grow naturally. Now I really don't have any. I was actually looking for some scientific evidence, and there were some references to things, but I just didn't take the time to go read the footnotes and then go look up the book and all that stuff. But organically grown garlic is I should say apparently, and in Europe it's actually been researched, and that's some of the references I had. The health enhancing properties or characteristics of the garlic is improved when it is grown organically as opposed to a fertilized plant. And as we all know, that's another reason for garlic. I mean, you just said you know, we either love it or hate it, but even if you don't like it, you should be aware that it has some, you know, some good medicinal, or I shouldn't say medicinal, but I should say, you know, health-giving properties that make it a really good choice for amending breads and putting on pizzas and, you know, salads and all that stuff. Mixing, you know, I mix it into turkey burgers or meatloafs or whatever, because it's just really a good addition. And one of the things I find, no proof whatsoever, but since I really started to use it as a regular ingredient in cooking and preparing like soups and breads and all that stuff, I have found that my incidence of colds has gone down dramatically. And again, I also take a little cold, sort of a concoction of compounded natural ingredients and herbs and things in like capsule form, and that, and I'm sure that has something to do with it as well. But between those two things, anyway, my incidence, my personal incidence of colds and sniffles and you know, sore throats and all the stuff associated with a cold has declined drastically. And you know, we have, where I live, we have four seasons, and one of them is pretty cold. So you know, you can get a lot of that, a lot of the cold giving situations, and I just don't seem to. And don't seem to get them, and you know, I get some support from other people who agree that, you know, they also have experienced less, you know, less colds, less sniffles, and all that.
One of the things we most think about when oh, garlic, or we see garlic tablets or garlic, or, you know, the advertised or you know, capsules for garlic you take daily. I think the first thing that pops into a lot of mind was back when it was all this research and all this publicity about garlic helping your cardiac, lower cholesterol, better heart health.
As I was talking, I was trying to think of anticipating. You might say, "Well, what are some of those benefits?" I was thinking quite a bit of things, because all I could think of was, I mean, all I really was interested in at first, besides the flavor, of course, was the cold or anti-cold aspects. And yeah, you're absolutely true. The garlic and the opportunity to use garlic in food has come to us, you know, very popularly from, you know, from a standpoint of cholesterol lowering effects and the heart health. So that's, you know, it really isn't that costly. I mean, you can put some in the ground and, you know, harvest it, and you've got a lot of it, and it doesn't take up a lot of room. I mean, it's you know, it's a really, really good choice for garlic for product. And so, you know what, as I said, the stiff neck varieties grow best where the winters are cold and frigid, and there's a bunch of, you know, different varieties, but the thing is to prepare the soil and do the kind of work you need to grow garlic, you know, correctly is pretty much the same for, you know, for any variety of garlic, and again, you know, all the garlics are easy to grow. The one thing that, I guess I'll start, soil prep. You want to try to get a place that drains easily, or drains, you know, by itself, free draining. A loamy soil, and you know, as with most, you know, with most good gardeners, in this case you really want to use an organically amended with, you know, with compost and just built up soil that is not, you know, not fertilized with a commercial fertilizer. You want to keep it as thick soil, and you can build up the soil with green manures, your regular composting pile stuff. You know, obviously chicken litter and everything that's been composted in all that. Just tilled into the soil. The other addition some people use is alfalfa meal, and maybe a little bit of ground up fish bone. You've probably seen that. You can either buy that, or you can you know, do it yourself if you eat a lot of fish. But you know, all those ingredients, the composting, the natural soils, and the and maybe a little bit of alfalfa or fish bones will help to prepare the soil for, you know, a good bed. And the other thing, pH level should be at a level of about, you know, 6.2 to about 7, just right about in the middle there, because you know, it tends to like that kind of soil. The other thing that garlic likes or prefers is not to have a lot of competition. So the only thing you really have to keep your eye on is weeding. Just keep the weeds and other competing plants down or away from the garlic beds, because you know, they do much better when they're, you know, than by themselves and don't have to compete with anything else. So and they in themselves are not particularly susceptible to insects, because just the nature of the plant, you know, it's a little it's probably offensive to the bugs and whatever. And they will rot in the ground if the soil is moist, or if they're kept in the ground too long. They will start to deteriorate. But again, that's, you know, it's hard to really describe it. I mean, it's really a matter of experience. And I've done it before, figuring, well, you know, it's not, you know, there's techniques for harvesting, or what the what the stalks look like or whatever from the top. And you know, you can be fooled if you don't have the experience, and you can wait, put it off, and then when you finally pull them, you know, they're deteriorated or rotten or black in places, and that's just not, you know, not anything more than not having the experience to know, you know, when to harvest it. But so, you know, you want to plant them in the fall, as I said, or that's what I would do. And the timing would be such that you want to give the roots time to develop and grow into the ground and develop, but you don't want the tops to come out of the soil before, you know, before the winter sets in, so you can't go too early, because then you'll have them actually coming out at the very beginning of winter, which is too soon. So you want them to actually be bedded and develop in the ground and then sprout later, you know, into the next season, but not, it'd be very, very early in the next season. So, you know, that's sort of the timing of it. And I, you know, it's hard to describe it, because there could be people, I mean, the growing seasons, depending on your zone, is going to
mm-hmm.
be quite different. But having said that, you pretty much understand, just don't plant them early enough to let the sprouts come out, you know, before winter. So it makes it easy. The other thing that people, you know, I'm sure a complete greenhorn would not realize, but, you know, I'm not saying that in a bad way. The bulbs have to be broken apart in cloves, because you can, it's like a potato. I mean, you don't want to just stick the entire potato in the ground and let it grow. You want to cut it up so that each piece has an eye,
mm-hmm.
and then you can get
mm-hmm.
many more plants out of each potato. Same thing with the garlic. I mean, you want to break it apart and you can, it's called cracking, just break it apart into its individual cloves and then you know, plant them. And usually they break away pretty cleanly. You can, the hard-necked garlics tend to be actually physically hard, so you might have to wrap them on a hard table or a rock or something to, you know, physically crack the stem, and then it'll break apart easier from that point. What you also may want to do is to set aside a little bit of the smaller cloves. You can either eat them, you know, put them in your salad and enjoy them right then, or you can set them aside for preserving, you can put them close together like you would green onions, and you can actually have some spring greens that way. So the large cloves will produce a good sized bulb at the end of the season, and the smaller cloves will produce smaller bulbs, and, you know, if they're planted tightly together, they'll be more of a greenery as opposed to like a big bulb. And, you know, what I did, and I guess it worked for me, is you can plant them in single or double rows, and that's what I did, and just get them in the ground, and you know, it really depends. It depends on how many you plant. I did not plant that many, but you want about eight inches or so between each row and between each plant to give plenty of room, both between the rows and plant to plant, to allow each garlic plant to absorb what it can from the soil. The tighter you put them in the beds, you'll get a larger number of smaller bulbs, and the farther apart you spread them, you'll get a mm-hmm. smaller amount of larger bulbs. So, you know, it's pretty straight up. And, of course, the other thing is you need to put the top of the clove up, and it has to, you know, that sounds ridiculous, but you know, you need to point it in the right direction, and it'll go mm-hmm. about two inches down into the soil, you know, so it's deep enough to get the protection, the full blanket of soil, and it's deep enough to get the full protection of the, you know, the ground cover and anything else through the winter. Yet not so deep that, you know, it's going to have trouble, you know, working its way out.
Right. I learned that the hard way with so many crops, planting them too deep from, you know, the beets and the collards and greens. It's just about everything. I was notorious for a long time planting too deep. I learned my lesson to just, you know, it doesn't take much for a lot of these things, especially smaller seeds.
Oh, to go too deep, yeah.
Yeah, I always plant too deep a lot of times. So I learned my lesson on that, not to plant too deep. Even when I have some hired help, I really stress that. Do not. I'd rather you just put the seed on the top of the ground than plant it too deep if you had a choice.
Yeah, no, that's
a
good point. And of course, you know, you can mulch after you planted. You can mulch. You know, mulching retains water, keeps the moisture in, moderates the soil temperatures. Now, you know, with the garlic, it may not be as critical, but it also keeps the weeds down, which is a good thing with garlic. And if you put that bed of mulch on top, you have already resolved some of the reasons why you may have planted too deep just by mulching. In other words, you don't need to go so deep if you mulch because you already have some protection on top. And that's, just think about that. Like when you're about to dig too deep, just think, you know, I'm going to put mulch on top of here, so I don't really don't need to go as deep as I thought. So, you know, maybe a good safety trick there to remember. If you are in a warmer climate where your growing season is going to be longer and your winter season isn't necessarily as cool, you want to store the hardneck in a cool spot before you plant, and that would be, they have to just go through a cold period because that's how their sprouting gets triggered, is by, you know, just like a lot of plants, they have to go through cycles of temperature changes, and then it triggers off the natural cycle of the plant. And if you put the garlic in a cool, dry place, you don't want it too moist, and of course not too cold, but 45 degrees or so, a couple to 3 weeks maybe ahead of time before you plant, you can replicate the need for cold that it has. And, you know, a refrigerator may be a little too cool for that long because most refrigerators are going to be cooler than 45 degrees, but you can put them in a cool, you can bring them down to temperature in a refrigerator, maybe then put them in a place that's just absolutely like a garage or a basement or some corner or some place where it doesn't get sun or any warmth really, and just try to maintain that 45 or below 50 degree Fahrenheit range. And, you know, just a couple weeks, two to 3 weeks would be enough for that. And then you can take them out and plant them, plant them at that point. So that would be for the warmer, the warmer climates. And the mulching, as I said, just basically, using your regular mulching materials. And it does help moderate the extremes of the hot and cold that might, be hitting the soil. And a garlic plant really doesn't like to go through those cycles of freezing and thawing and all those external cycles that affect, a lot of plants. And one of the reasons is that if you have anything like frosties, if you're actually cold enough to go through, and we've been seeing this a lot here. I mean, it used to be that the temperature would get cold and it would pretty much stay cold or cool, and it wouldn't go through these massive cycles. Well, it seems like more and more every year it goes. Sometimes we have winters where it might get up to 60 degrees or close to 60, and then it goes down to 28 or whatever, and it goes back up to 55. You know, so you'll have a lot of soil expansion and contraction, and that's definitely not good for the bulbs because it can pull the roots right off the clothes if the penetration of that heaving gets down, into that level where the bulbs are growing. So it'll actually rip the roots right out. So, that's not a good thing. By the same token, garlic isn't a big heaper either. So, that mulch will really be a good benefit to have to help moderate those temperatures. As far as moisture goes, it likes a pretty regular dose of water when it's early growth period, and then towards the end of its growth, if you can manage it, it prefers not to have too much moisture. So it's sort of a drier situation in the last couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks of its growth phase. And again, for somebody who's really just starting, it's very difficult to tell when near the end of its growth period is, when it is to harvest. But that's something that can be That's something that can be learned with experience. If you, you know, you you have a situation when they're ready to harvest, when the leaves is will actually start to die back, and it's again it's very approximate. They'll you know they'll sort of turn brown, and you can sort of see you know see what what's what. But the only way you can really do it is to dig in and just take some samples and just take a look at it, see how the bulbs are formed. You know, if the bulb has reached its, you know, reached a decent size and the and before the actual outer skin wrappings begin to begins to come off or the bulbs begin to split, you want to catch it before that. And the bulb will not keep very well if the skin isn't sealed and intact. Once that skin's open, it's going to start to deteriorate. And with the hardneck, stiff neck varieties, they're you know that's more of a problem because they don't keep nearly as long as the soft neck varieties do anyway. So it's you know it's a matter of just paying attention to them and sort of pulling them at the right time. And what you want to do is pull them out with a you can loosen them with a spade, like a narrow spade if you have one. Loosen the ground alongside the rows, you know, around the garlic, you know, each side, and then you can, you know, you can just sort of lift it out. If you use a fork, you're more likely to pierce the, you know, poke a hole and hit one of the bulbs and poke a hole in it. So it's, you know, that's a risky proposition unless you got some really small implements and you're pretty good with your hands. But I think a narrow bladed spade or trowel really does. You know, in a garden, a trowel would be fine. If you've got a much bigger plot of a bed of garlic, you may want to use more of a spade or shovel. But you know, a narrow blade works better. And then you can just separate the plants out by hand. What you want to do is when you actually pull them out in the spring, you don't want to leave them in the sun. You don't want to lay them out and leave them in the sun. Actually, they will get sunburned. I mean, strangely enough, they get sunburned and damaged by direct rays of the sun when they're pulled like that from the soil. So you may want to put them in a basket or a container and then just get them out of the sun on a regular basis, or cover them up at least while you're harvesting so you don't expose it for a long time. And that's it's little things, but it's important to remember for the best harvest. Now making the powder is a whole other step here, and you know it's not hard, but it's just sort of important procedures as we go through. Mm-hmm. Best thing, you know, just like the tools, you'll just a small sharp knife. If you have any kind of food processor or grinding, you know, blender or whatever, mm-hmm. would make things easier. You can do it by hand, but it's much easier to have a blender of some type, a sieve, and some method of drying the bulbs or the chunks, because they will not work well. They will not make powder well without being dried, and that can be an oven at the very least, an oven that you can turn down to an extremely low heat. Like some ovens just don't do that. They don't go below 150 maybe, but some, on the other hand, will go down. When you turn them down extremely low, they can go down to what we're looking for is about 115 degrees Fahrenheit, just a very, very mild heat. And you don't want it too hot because you'll lose the enzymes. It'll actually be driven out of the cloves if you're too hot. If the oven's too hot, the drying process, and if it's too cool, if it's too low, it's going to take forever to dry, and you know you don't want that either. Although that's better than burning them or over drying them. So what you want to do is manually separate the bulbs and the cloves, and remove the wrappers of the papery. I talked about the skin, you know, the papery mm-hmm. wrappers. Mm-hmm. Get them off there, and then you want to peel them. You know, that's the other skins or, you know, a regular moisture actual skin. So the best way to do that is to take off the base, just cut the base of the clove off opposite the tip, and you get under the skin at that point and just peel it right off. Another way is, I mean, that can take some time. You can probably save a little time by, after you trim the base ends off, just cut the clothes lengthwise. And you can layer them then in your, whatever you're going to use for a dehydrator. You can use a, you know, you can use a tray, like a, I have a metal tray, one of those air filled, or I don't know how, what they call them, but they have a, they have sort of a core of air in there, or separation. But just a, you know, just a drying pan for the oven, or if you have a dehydrator, you will have a tray with a, usually a screen in there. So you can just lay them onto the trays and let them dry, and the skin's going to come off. If you slice them long ways, if you use that method, the skin's going to come off. The skin's going to stay on it when you, even after you slice them, and then once they start to dry after a couple of hours, the skin will just curl up, and then you can basically pull them, you know, they'll peel themselves off almost, you know, just fall away basically and curl back, and you can just pull them off yourself. And then once the skin's off, if you've done that, you can slice the clothes into very small pieces, and the smaller the better, because it exposes more surface area for drying. And you can just put them in the dehydrator trays or the oven tray, whatever, and just dry it until the pieces actually snap in two when you go to bend them. They can't be rubbery. You want to dry them.
Can you say that you could use? You talked about doing the oven low temp and that type of thing.
Right.
It almost reminds me of maybe putting them in a dehydrator. Is that? I didn't. Did you say we could use a heat dryer? Okay, gotcha.
If you have a dehydrator, that would be even better. Obviously, if you have a dehydrator, that's perfect for what you're doing. That does have a good dehydrator, you know, even a not good dehydrator has a capability to have those lower temperatures pretty well adjustable down at the lower ends, because that's where they dry. And of course, you know, they'll vent, the real dehydrators ventilate better than your oven will. That's another part of the magic of dehydration, is getting the ventilation going, so the airflow, so that moisture doesn't hang around on the plant, on the clove or on the apple or wherever you're drying.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get rid of the moisture too, so, but not, you know, not too quickly. So that's that. Now, I guess with the oven, you can put them either on aluminum foil or the cookie sheet, like I said, and just turn the pieces over once in a while, because again, that's the dehydrator, the real dehydrator has a screen tray, so the air can pass up through the bottom and on out the top, but your oven doesn't have that luxury, so you'll have to turn the chunks occasionally to get both sides exposed to the drying process. So then once they're dry, and it really is sort of hard to say. I mean, it depends on your, you know, with the dehydrator, it's going to be quicker. With the oven, it could be a while. But the point is, when the pieces snap instead of just bending, they're dry. So
mm-hmm.
Once you get to that point, you can put them in the blender or your food processor, or I guess if you don't have one, you can just take a knife and just really spend a lot of time cutting it, or I guess even a hand chopper. I mean, I've seen those, you know, just a hand-operated chopper. That'll be better than trying to do it with a knife. But you find something that you can actually grind, chop, or blend, the little pieces up, and make sure you get, you know, you may have to rotate that in the blender. You may have to tip it aside or whatever. Just get everything chopped up, and you'll get a nice powder. I mean, if it's dry, you'll get a nice powder. If it's not dry, you're going to get chunks of moist, soupy mush, and you don't want that. It has to be a dry. It has to actually come out as a powder when you're when you're finished. So what's going to happen is, I mentioned a sieve before, or some type of a screen. What's going to happen is even the mechanized grinder is not going to get a uniform size out of the product. You're going to find some powder, and then you're going to find some larger chunks. So you're going to have to put the whole shoot and match through the sieve or the screen. They can let the powder fall out through the bottom, and then the larger pieces will remain. And then, you can just put whatever of the bigger pieces back into the blender and just go right on with the process. So what you ended up doing is just blending and sifting. And at some point, you're going to find, you're going to find that everything's powdered. Now, you know, you can always set aside some of the larger pieces for specialty stuff. I mean, you can put them in salads or whatever, but, you know, the goal is to get as much powder as you feel you need.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always going to be some left over in the grinder or the blender. You know, just the nature of the thing, just it'll throw some pieces around, you know, not too much, but just throw some pieces around without actually cutting them. So, you know, if you're saving some of the bigger pieces, they can just go in with them, and you can use them in your salad and whatever. What you want to do is, now the powder is dry at this point, and you want to keep it dry, so you have to seal it in, you know, best thing to do is a small canning jar, you know, real easy, definitely a good seal. You know, a clean canning jar, fill the container and seal it, you know, put the lid on, and as soon as you make it, because it's dry then, and then you can store it in a cool, you know, in a cool place out of the sunlight, preferably, and eventually, you know, it will avoid having, what it will do if it's not sealed correctly is will actually absorb moisture from the, you know, from the air, so it's really important.
Right.
You know, you can put them in a plastic Ziploc type bag. Just make sure the zipper is closed and make sure it's out of the direct sunlight and definitely in a cool place because you don't want it to, you know, be too warm. Now, you know, like I said, you can give this. You've got this, you know, substantial amount of powder if you made that much, and it makes a great gift because it's, you know, it's really, you don't see the stuff in the store. The stuff you get in the stores is not hardneck for one thing, and it's not nearly the quality that you can make yourself. So when someone is given a gift of, you know, 2 ounces or a little, you know, a little jar of, you could, but you don't need to give like a 8 ounces of as a gift. You can put them in smaller
mm-hmm.
jars and give them as gifts. And when someone gets a gift like that, it really is unique because you just don't see this stuff every day.
One mistake people make too is that a lot of people will go and buy garlic salt, and then they're getting all that sodium, and they're putting the garlic salt versus, say, garlic powder, say, on their French bread for their pizza, or maybe they're using it for cooking, and they're getting all that excess sodium they don't need. They want the garlic flavor. They want the benefits of garlic. I've seen that in cupboards all over, family cupboards, friends, where it's garlic salt, not necessarily garlic powder. And,
yeah, absolutely. And people don't realize, they see the word garlic and they don't see the word salt, and they think that garlic is naturally salty and burn, and, you know, it isn't. I mean, that's a totally different animal.
Right.
And like I said, when you actually get a taste of real hard stiff-neck garlic that's been powdered or powderized, it's a whole unique experience, and you know, it's one that, you know, people really will appreciate. You know, we had an article about this from a fellow in upstate New York some years ago, and he, what he does is he definitely gives these little 2 ounce or 2 1/4 ounce jars that he gets. I'm sure he saves them from something or whatever, recycles them,
uh-huh.
or you can buy them from any online spice supplier or maybe even your co-op or whatever. You can buy both labels and the jars, and, you know, you can package the larger bulk stuff you've made into the small 2 ounce jars and stick your own label on there, and, you know, it makes a really great gift, and you know, it's inexpensive for you and it's appreciated by the receiver, and you know, just makes a great, you know, a really nice present, and you know, that's just once you've grown it, the actual preparation the preparation of making the powder and the drying doesn't take hardly any time at all. So even if you had to buy the garlic, if you were fortunate enough to find someone who was selling stiff-neck bulbs ready to go, harvested, ready to go, and then you just had to dry them, that would be a way to go as well. But, you know, the way I figured, it's so easy to grow and so inexpensive that you might as well just do it yourself.
Sorry, I muted myself so you wouldn't hear the background noise. So, folks in the chat room are saying, the show's making me want garlic bread or pizza with this garlic all over it. There were some questions in there about saving it in oil like you would dried tomatoes, and someone had said that was a no-no in there as well. Some people are like, hey, you know, Google some more information before you try something like that and do that. But I know that I'll definitely be putting garlic in late fall, so I don't want it sprouting too soon. And then I'll definitely have to try this. I do have a dehydrator. I can make sure that I get all that paper skin off. I'll clove it, and I'll put it in the dehydrator till it snaps, like you were talking about, doesn't bend. And then I've got a kind of like a baby bullet type of blender thing. I'll blend it up in that, and I'll definitely try this. And then I may just have to get one of those, the smallest little, I've seen some tiny little ones that people would use for gifts. I mean, just, I don't even know what ounce it is, tiny little mason jars, but I mean, they're tiny. And that they put just a little bit of jam or jelly in, they gave away as gifts. And I guess I could get a can like that. And if I really wanted to, I could get an awl or something and smash some holes in it and use that as a sprinkler right out of the jar if I'm just using a little bit at a time, kind of like grated cheese or something like that, or I'm sure they make the specialized sprinklers and things like that. So, but no, great topic. Hey, I've got 1 o'clock on the dot. I know you have definitely got to get somewhere where you need to go, and I'm going to hit the road and then finish our trip up to ALBC conference there in Cary, North Carolina. So if there's anything else, if not, we can definitely let you go, and we appreciate you taking the time out of your day and fitting us in today.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks and enjoy the Livestock Breeds Conservancy meeting or conference. And yeah. I'm sure you'll have a lot to say about that when you come back. So we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks then.
Richard, thank you very, very much for coming on today, working us into your busy schedule. Folks, it's Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. You love him when he's on the show on the second and fourth Thursday of every month. So you know you're going to love his publication, backhomemagazine.com. You can go there, you can subscribe online, you can call the number, and you will talk to somebody right there in North Carolina, pick up the phone, talk to you, you'll be able to understand them, and you can order that is great publication at backhomemagazine.com as well. Thank you, Richard, for coming on. I know you have a meeting to go to at 1:30, so time was with the essence, but of course, same with us. We are heading right on up. We're about to hop in the car. I'm already in there. And heading up 95 towards Cary. We should get there in about 3 hours from now. And here's the deal, folks. I promise you I'm going to do my best. I will do my best to do my duty. No, wait, that's Cub Scouts. I will do my best tomorrow to have a radio show, and I'll do my best to have a radio show Saturday. I'm not there yet. I don't know where, if there is a place I can do the show, but I'm going to do my best. I promise. You have my word. So there's to have a radio show tomorrow at our same time, 12 o'clock. I may have to schedule it later, but I'll keep you posted on Facebook. It just depends on kind of I know I'm presenting tomorrow from 8 to 11:30. And then if I can find a place to do the radio show from there, maybe set up some interviews with some of the other speakers that are there, some other attendees, I will do my best. Now, it may not be at noon. It may be a 1 o'clock show, a 3 o'clock show. I don't know. But I will try, and I will post all the information on Facebook and Twitter. If I schedule the show or differently, you'll still get an update via email when I schedule the show about an hour before the show is scheduled. So check your email. But definitely check Facebook, because I'll be promoting it on Facebook. So I'm going to do my best sometime tomorrow to broadcast from the conference. And also Saturday. I'm not sure when Saturday. It could be a 9 a.m., 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Eastern. But I'll do my best also to have a special show broadcasting live on location from the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy Annual Conference. So I don't have any other information than that, but I do, but I will try to have a show for us tomorrow and on Saturday. So that's kind of the game plan here. So be watching, and on our Facebook page, I'll announce that, and hopefully I can get some good interviews with some of the other speakers and authors that are going to be there talking about heritage breed everything. And I'll do my best. I'll post a lot of pictures on my Facebook page as well, if there's things to take pictures of. So at least maybe me and Pat. So I'm looking forward to seeing Pat and many others we've had on the show and other authors out there. So I'll keep you all posted. So broadcasting live on the road, this is Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer, live on location here in Florence, South Carolina, making an overnight stop on our way to Cary for the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. So thank you very much for tuning in. Thanks to Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, for coming on today, talking all about garlic, the benefits of garlic, and how to make homemade garlic powder. Yum, yum, yum. So please tune in tomorrow. Again, I'm not sure what time, but I'll be posting that on Facebook. So have a great day, everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow and Saturday from the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy Annual Conference. Thanks for tuning in. Love you all. Ha 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 ha